Ukraine. C-R-A-N-E. Hugh for Hewitt, H-E-W-I-T-T. And you say, "What? How'd you get such a screwy first name?" Well, my mother was, when I was about to be born, was reading some kind of English novel. And the person's name in there was Hewitt.
You lucked out.
So I became Hewitt. And although Hewitt is a fairly common last name, in my entire life, I never, ever met anyone with Hewitt as a first name until a year or two ago, I ran into someone. So, I got to sort my head out. I'm going to tell you about something that went on 40 years ago and caused quite a stir at the time. Probably aren't more than 1 in 100 people who know what I'm going to tell you now. But I think it has a chance of making a very major impact. This is something, how I got involved with Doug Engelbart 40 years ago. You know, let me move in what this thing is. You know that I worked at Princeton on the von Neumann, I'll call it the von Neumann machine. And it was clear by about 1956 it was closing down. It had served its purpose. And now this was that machine was built at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton near the university. And Sarnoff Laboratories, RCA Sarnoff Labs were in Princeton. So, and a well-known man at that time, Jan Reichman, R-A-J-C-H-M-A-N, got to be pretty well-known because he and the guy from MIT, whose name slips me at the moment, both got credit for developing the magnetic core memory.
Forrester.
I'll get back to that. My head's really buzzing with so many things here. So, Jan Reichman, who was one of the two of them fought for who really developed the magnetic core, he got a hold of me. He heard I was going to leave the Princeton von Neumann machine, and he said, "You got to come join me at Sarnoff," which incidentally is SRI now, you probably know that SRI owns. Okay. As of 10 years or so ago, it was gifted to them by GE when GE acquired RCA. So Jan, who was a really nice man, I said, okay, but only under one condition. You're talking about magnetic material for memory, magnetic core memory, like you showed. I want to use magnetic cores to do logic, not memory. That'd be really hot stuff, wouldn't it? Non-destructive ferrite and copper, there aren't many things more inert than copper wire and ferrite material. I said, if you can do logic with that, you'll make a revolution. Well, we did. And I'll tell you now why we didn't yet make a revolution, but I think it's coming. And to be just a bit more specific, how I got started with that, you know, there are these little toroids.
Mm-hmm. Little donuts.
Little tiny donuts. Yeah. And they're magnetic. So if you put a current through a wire, through the core, the right-hand rule or whatever kind of rule, you can magnetize that core this way or this way, a 1 or a 0. Now, there are many things more inert or stable than copper wire and ferrite. Oops. Copper wire and ferrite. And so his goal at that time was, oh, can't we do sheets of ferrite at least, where we'll leave little holes, and we can silver plate or whatever.
Sounds like the power batteries.
You can plate the wires so that you don't. I never got involved with it, but my understanding was that the way the core memory stuff got started, how can you put a million cores? How do you wire it up in three space? And I heard that they really took over the shoe industry. Let's see, scratch that, because I can't go further with it at the moment. So I got involved, and I said to Jan, I said, I want to do work on logic, not memory. And he said, that was very good. And so I started working on that, and it was beginning to look interesting. And that's when I got an emergency call from SRI because one of the people from the Princeton group had moved over to SRI. That's the one they were building the Bank of America Irma machine. I said, okay. The machine was done, but it hadn't been debugged yet, and this was still the days 40 years ago when debugging a machine was quite a process. And that's how I got to meet who was the third person who was going to come this morning, Jack Goldberg from SRI. Because I worked with him, and when I came to SRI, I spent the first few months laying on the floor looking at diagrams. Because it was only later that you learned how to use computers to check me in computers. And so we had quite a process. I got to know Jack very well, laying on the floor together. I'd say, Jack, that's the wrong connection for something to go from here to there. And he would say, oh, yeah. And I had a night crew every night, all the errors we found in the design. And this is no put-down, because that was the state of how computers were done in those days, because you didn't have computers to design computers. And so this was just the way it happened. And I got to know Jack Goldberg quite well, who was going to come this morning. Let me stop a second. Anyway, it was quite a process getting that machine working, but it was extremely successful. And I don't know whether you were, about a year or two ago, Bank of America held a special 50th anniversary, almost 40th, and there was a big group at SRI paying tribute to that machine, and I hadn't realized that machine revolutionized things like everything to do with credit cards and all started in that machine. Let me move ahead. Oh, so my agreement with Jerry, in a few months if we could get off the floor and breathe again. And I said to Jerry, hey Jerry, you know, we didn't do this in writing, but I'm through with that stuff now. I want to get into this other thing. So that's how we got started on this magnetic, all magnetic logic. So I'm gonna make big jumps. If anything's interesting, we'll go back. So what are your degrees of freedom? You got a toroid, and you got some wire, and you have a right-hand rule. Right. You like the right-hand rule?
That's why
we can have the left-hand rule. And the question is, in those days, if someone had a new logic technique, the very first thing, can you build a shift register? If you could build a shift register, in principle, you can do anything. And So we had to get access to sources of cores, people who could press different shapes. So we were playing with cores with different kind of shapes, or cores with holes in it, so you could put in little windings that could do things locally or grossly or whatever. Like, a long story short, in about 1 year, we could build a shift register. And so we knew we're home now. So we could build a shift register, put up a series of zeros and ones, and it'll move along. Nothing there, nothing but copper and ferrite. Now, then, Dave Bennion and Charlie Rosen, who you were referring to with his robot. Yeah, the three of us, as a little sideline, made a winery that started running out of control and becoming pretty famous. I should keep this going here. Let's stop it a second. So we started to... A license arm got into place right away. AMP, the big connector company. At that time, the timing was terrific because they were a big company. They were the ones that, as far as I know, were the suppliers of the General Motors of the world and cars. And if you had a special connector problem, you went to AMP. I forget what it means, AMP. I can't remember. Anyway, a fellow named... I'll tell you in a moment. Dave Bennion and I went down and gave a presentation at one of the annual computer conferences down south, and we brought our demo along so that to show people it could work. And there's significance there because it was developing in the field of those pro and con, people saying, you can't. You couldn't possibly do that kind of logic system with too inert, no gain, so to speak, no vacuum tubes with grid plate grain or transistors by that time. It seemed like it'd be magic. Well, no. We did it. Could demonstrate it. And it turns out that there was someone sitting in the audience from AMP. Joe Sweeney was called, who came up. Said, hey, I want to go home with you. Learn more about this. And to make that story short, they got really turned on. The story he said was that AMP was so dominating in their field that they knew they had to branch out. Can't live on connectors all your life, even though they're very successful. And Joe Sweeney was involved in that loop from letting them stretch out. And when he found this technology, he got very excited about it. And in short order, within about a year or so, we were demonstrating how to build general purpose machines. And they took over and started to do what's totally unknown. Anything I'm going to tell you, you don't know. I know you don't know. And you don't know. Because this fell out of the mainstream. But AMP was developing, I mean, where would you think people would be excited about that? Maybe in space, where reliability and radiation resistant. So that's a need, but we were presenting the capability. And I dropped out at the time that was building up, and I was doing some things with Doug Engelbart in those old days. And this thing started going off in its own life. And I knew it was doing all right, because they survived. But it makes a big jump. I went into many different fields between then and now. I put totally away from computers. Until... about 2 years, 3 years ago. I said, well, maybe a little longer by now. I said, God, you know, I totally lost track of Joe Sweeney, and I know they were doing things, and people were buying things. I know they were flying in space. I said, I got to tune back in. That's when I think I disappeared for a little while. 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And I said, hey, Joe, who's now well retired, he's older than me. I said, hey, I have no feeling. So how big did it get with you, with Amp? And he said, you know, he was a manager of the whole stuff. And he said, God, you really got me going. I was thinking the same thing. I saved enough corporate. I have a lot of brown bundles of papers, because he was the division director. He said, I'm going to thumb through it, and I'll be back to you shortly. And he came back with a list of stuff where this all magnetic logic stuff was being incorporated. And it added up. I said, please translate that to 1990 dollar values. And he said, probably $300 million. I said, $300 million. And you're the only ones. Yes, we are. We were the only ones. They dropped out after 10 or 20 years for a good reason. AMP to SRI. AMP supported some stuff there, in that sense, a client. But then they took it out. I'm not sure SRI made a nickel on the royalties. It was long enough ago they didn't know how to run things like this. But anyway. Yeah. So I said, wow. And I said, Joe, can you put that, just break it down roughly by category, what kind of things got made? And it came back with a dozen products, many of which are still flying in space today. IFF, friend or foe kind of things. Signals, I mean, places you can't think of any more you'd want. Utter reliability. But they were in many forms. For example, the Ontario, I think it's Ontario, Canada, there's a railroad switching yard there. The switch yard is where trains come in from any direction, and there's turntables, so you can reconstitute a train with, depending where they're all heading, with different cars. Biggest in the world. They apparently, said Joe, rebuilt their entire control system to all magnetic computers. No vacuum tubes, no PNPs, no solid state. I said, well, okay, but why? Well, one thing, obviously, reliability is super duper. And in fact, on a little aside, part of the New York subway system was rebuilt the same way. And he said to me, because I had this feeling myself once, I said, geez, I know they put something in the subway system. Wouldn't it be kick to go see it? You know, it's still presumably running. And he, that's exactly what he did independently of what I was thinking. He called the head of maintenance for the New York City subway system and explained that they replaced part of the system. I want to go see it. I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine. There's no maintenance. There's nothing to maintain. Yeah, can you imagine copper and ferrite? There's nothing to
maintain. Yeah.
And the what? Oh, yeah. Well, you can smash it with an axe. And he said they actually went down in there and kicked. He and the maintenance heads from New York City. There it was. This thing was built up, box and crap. There's nothing to go into check.
Yeah.
So anyway, here came this list with the bottom line being about $300 million dollars, third of a billion, third of $1 billion, today's dollars. Many of it in Well, many applications. I can show you the whole list if you want. And I said, Joe, I've been sort of dreaming. How the hell? That's too powerful. No one can ever tell me when you have that kind of capability with just two materials. It has to have a very major place in a complex world. Some people need ultra speed, and the other people don't need ultra speed. It could go slower. It's okay. So anyway, there is that thing which is still lurking of what to do with it. It's coming to life now. And I'll tell you the other part. When I'm going back now to the late, early 1960s when I was finishing up that stuff. So I don't think I mentioned that we actually at SRI built an entire computer. But I don't think I mentioned that, did I?
No,
all magnetic. We built. I said, God damn, I'm going to show you how to do it. I mean, once you have a basic technique, you know, it's one thing to build a shift register, that's kind of easy. But to build it, a thing that runs. And I think, I mentioned this to Doug the other day, there's a Colonel Butch. You were involved with many documents from the Doug Center, right? Doug said, yeah, that sounds right. That was the guy who supported me. Doug supported him from RADC. And so anyway, I don't quite remember how I got a hold of Butch. Maybe it was one time he was visiting Doug. So I said to him, can you think of anything that would be more exciting to the military than something that is radiation resistant, that is essentially error free? kind of interesting. Even more interesting, there were two communities developing in the world, right, like to one thing you were saying before. People saying, you can't do it. It's not the right game characteristic. It's inert ferrite and inert copper wire. What can you do? Well, I said, you can do plenty. So, not only did we demonstrate it then with a little shift register, I said, I'll build you a digital multiplier. Plug in any numbers you want, and you push a button, and go away, and come out. So the product. And I said, okay, support me to do that much. Just, if I demonstrate to you that I can build a digital multiplier, then it'll disperse any problems of general capability. And then we did. We made a big splash. Cover the IEEE magazine, showing pictures of these ferrite cores. It was a stir-making, because it was the time when, when we talk about mean time to failure. Well, the mean time to failure here is very long, unless you hit it with an axe. And, so, I think I built and had its heyday, but it was a time when chips were coming up in speed now.
Yeah.
Just at the time this thing got sort of public and a lot of play, it's the kind of thing in the other times it would have gotten incredible play. It only got, wow, a lot of play, because there was a theory involved, theoretical aspect too. And so Amp went away, and I lost track of them until 2-3 years ago, and now I have this playback, which just startled me. I'll send you a list of all of the applications, the 10 categories of them. It'll startle you. Mm-hmm. So I said to Joe Sweeney a few years ago, 3 or 4, Joe, I can't let it sit anymore. I got to get this story to astronomy world and ships that travel into orbit and plan to stay there a long time. And in fact, as I said, many of the things that AMP put in are still in orbit today, still running. There were systems, IFF, identification, FEDIFRA. Can you imagine anything could be better for that? What you want is an IFF, never to fail, identifying who's really out there, IFF. So I've been, over the last few years, slowly putting a story together. And I'm trying, I made a first pass at the voice of the guy at NASA who was in charge of the moon program. The voice of, I can always
Chris
hear,
Kraft?
Chris Kraft. The voice of Mission Control. And I got a hold of, I found out where he is in Texas. I called, figuring he'll get off fast. And we had quite a long conversation about 3 or 4 years ago. He said, wow, you know, I'm a little old for that stuff, but wow, you excite me. It's error-free. It dissipates no power when it's not running. You can shut it off and arbitrarily long time later, turn the switch and it'll pick up exactly where it left off. And it has zero standby power. Now, if you're in the space business and you're worrying about energy, you know, you want to shut things off. But when you turn them on, you'd like to start exactly where you left off. Well, good luck. But with this, it's part of the story. You shut it off, it stops, and copper doesn't change, and ferrite doesn't change.
There's the Hubble head.
And so, Chris Kraft said, wow, you tell me those 3 or 4 things, and you got me excited. So,
the issue has to be miniaturization. How small can you make it?
And never get into, well, no. I'm going to take back. I was going to say you never could get it as small, but I want to take that back. Because the way I got back into this, I ran across a paper 3 or 4 years ago by 3 authors, one from IBM and 2 from England or something like that, saying, well, I remember there were people who were building all magnetic computers out of ferrite. And so we've come so far in films, chips. We should be able to do that, not in cores, but in films. They said, yeah, right. So I wrote a letter to these 3 guys saying, you know, I don't know how old you are, but I ought to let you at least know what there were some of us who ran, I'll call it, through phase 1 of this opportunity. And if you get it going, there's a lot to be taking advantage of. And